welcome to the Creative Pen Podcast. I'm Joanna Penn, thriller author and professional speaker, bringing you interviews, inspiration and information on writing, publishing options and marketing ideas for your book. You can find the episode show notes, your free Author 2.0 blueprint and lots more information at thecreativepen.com. And that's pen with a double N. And here's the show. Hello, creatives. I'm Joanna Penn, and this is episode number 245 of the podcast. And it is the 27th of November 2015, as I record this. And we're coming into the home straight, heading towards 2016. Exciting times. So 7 years next week, on December the 8th, 2008, I started thecreativepen.com, just a little personal blog that was trying to help authors who were self-publishing, as I was back before the international Kindle, back before print on demand went mainstream, back in the days when things were super tough. I mean, you think it's hard now. It was a lot harder when there actually were no distribution mechanisms. So I soon discovered back then that just putting a blog up online didn't mean that anyone actually noticed me. And of course, that probably sounds familiar, and we all have that same issue with our books. So I absolutely believe in paying for training and paying to learn from people who've done what I want to do. And back then I was listening to a load of audios as I was driving to work and commuting by Yarrow Starak from Entrepreneur's Journey. And I was listening to Yarrow's audios, and and again, this was back before podcasting was a word or a thing, and there were audios online, but there wasn't podcasting as such. And in 2009, I bought Yarrow's Blog Mastermind course. And what he taught me changed my online life and is directly responsible for this podcast, for my Author 2.0 blueprint, which I've recently updated, for the courses I've done over the years, and pretty much for kickstarting my online business. So you'll hear about that in this interview today with Yarrow Starak, and I'm definitely a fangirl. You can also, if you are interested in turning your site into a profitable website, a business based on a blog, basically, as my site, The Creative Pen, is, you can get Yarrow's free, recently updated blog profits blueprint at thecreativepen.com/blog profits blueprint. And I'll read that out again at the end. Okay, on personal updates, Risen Gods and the co-writing book are out now. Risen Gods is also on a 99-cent special until 3rd of December. So go grab it now if you fancy a fast-paced action-adventure dark fantasy thriller set in New Zealand. And there's all kinds of my own memories woven into that book. And the co-writing book is also available, and both are ebook only right now, but Risen Gods is coming in print in the next week or so. I think the co-writing book, it's really very small, so it's not really going to be in print. This week I've done the first draft of a short story for the Stephen King short story competition run in the UK by The Guardian. It's so funny writing a short story, because it's over really fast, and then you realise that there's a lot of work to kind of finesse into the word count everything you want to achieve. And I haven't written too many short stories, but I'm giving it a go. Hey, you've got to give it a go, haven't you? And we only get better by writing, so got to do that. I've also started the initial research for Destroyer of Worlds, which will be mainly set in India. And that is, as ever, a lot of fun. I particularly enjoy the point in my process where I'm allowed to do anything I want. So that's cool. I also, interestingly, have for the first time set up an assetless pre-order for Destroyer of Worlds. Now, you would have heard about this on the interview with Mark Coker from Smashwords, and also next week's interview with Dan Wood from Draft to Digital, we talk about it as well. And both Mark and Dan say that the most successful authors use assetless pre-orders, because on Apple, Kobo and Nook and Draft to Digital and the other stores that Smashwords do, you can set up a pre-order without a cover, without any text, up to a year in advance. So I've set up a pre-order page for Destroyer of Worlds, which I did before I released Risen Gods, in the hope that people who discover my writing may start to pre-order Destroyer of Worlds. And if you're on Apple, if you do buy on Apple or Kobo or Nook, for example, have a look at that. I did do a quick basic cover on canva.com, canva.com, just as a placeholder, because I just didn't like the kind of really basic just text. But I don't know. Anyway, I have really resisted doing this before. I have done pre-orders on books, but I've pretty much only done them a couple of weeks in advance because of Amazon's 90-day pre-order thing. But also, I kind of feel more confident when I know what my timing will be based on what I've actually written. And I haven't written a word on Destroyer of Worlds, and I've put a pre-order date of 31st of March 2016. So, I will be delivering that, and my new attitude for 2016 is do more pre-orders. So I hope that encourages you if you've been scared. It's something the romance writers do very well, and as we all know, the romance writers are ahead of the pack. So I will be copying them and doing assetless pre-orders going forward. I wanted to mention that I went to see Elizabeth Gilbert speak in London last week, which was super. I always just take notebooks to these things, and often what I write down isn't actually related to what the person talking is talking about, but it's just things that come up as I'm listening. And it was really good. Some particular things, she talked about creativity and how we need to have one foot with the fairies, which I quite liked, and one in the pragmatic world. And I've talked about Plato's Chariot before, and how you have to keep these two sides running in parallel in order to, you know, keep an even chariot and a business going. She also talked about dealing with haters. It was so interesting, because of course with the massive success of Eat, Pray, Love, she also attracted a lot of haters, and that is ever the way. The higher you rise, and you know, the more fame and the more money and supposedly the better it is, you also attract the negative. And so she talked about that and said basically, if we have the right to speak with our words in our books, and we are lucky enough to have our words out in the world when so many people cannot speak, then other people also have the right to speak, but we don't need to listen. So just avoid negative reviews, as they will stay in your head, and choose who you listen to in terms of criticism. Do they have your best interests at heart, and where are they coming from when they criticize you? This is why I don't go to a writer's group, because I prefer to pay for a professional editor than take criticism from other writers who may or may not have their own agenda. So yeah, we just have to protect our creative inner child as such, who is very sensitive. I don't know anyone who doesn't have a very sensitive inner self when it comes to their writing. I'm back in London three times this week. This is my last mega back in London week. The last sort of things I already had booked before we moved. So I'm doing a book launch tomorrow, or at a book launch tomorrow, for the lovely Triskeel Writers Collective, who are fantastic. Then the bookseller author day on Monday, and I'll be tweeting from that, and I'm sure there'll be lots of tweets from Porter Anderson and others. And then also seeing some friends from Australia next week. And I've actually found I get a lot of work done on the train, so I don't mind going back and forwards. It's actually pretty good. So yeah, working on the train, super stuff. And of course, if you go back and listen to the interview with Mark Dawson earlier this year, you'll discover that he essentially wrote, I think it was 8 or 9 full-length novels in a year because of his 3-hour-a-day commute on a train. So if you are commuting, then yeah, trains good for writing. The other thing, interestingly, that Elizabeth mentioned was the longevity. And I talk about this with Yara Starek in the interview today. And her point was that the attrition rate with writing is so high that if you stick around long enough, you will do okay, as so many people give up. And I found that quite heartening. So I definitely recommend Big Magic, which is a great book on creativity. Okay, in publishing news, the KU Kindle Unlimited payout per page read dipped again. And people have been, you know, this is, I think, the fourth dip in a row. And this doesn't affect me as I'm not in KU. I've always gone wide. But I've what's been interesting is I think 2015 is the year of the tipping point of global. More and more I'm hearing authors who are moving onto the other platforms due to the low payouts. Authors saying that their Amazon royalties have dropped precipitously. And of course, we all love Amazon. And, you know, they enable us, many of us, to make a living. But the other platforms are brilliant as well. And the sooner you get on them, the easier it will be to build up your platform on those sites. So we'll have a message from Kobo Writing Life soon. But again, more of a reason to also keep building your own email list so you can sell books whatever changes in the industry. And on that topic is my little segue into I'm doing another webinar with Nick Stevenson. So Nick did a brilliant webinar back in June. We had a great time. People loved it. And I had great fun. I always love doing these webinars because I get to do the Q&A at the end and I always learn something. I always write down notes. And we're doing a webinar on how to explode your author platform and mailing list with free list building strategies, plus the 3-step system to automate your author marketing and find your first 10,000 readers. So Nick has helped me with my own fiction list building. My nonfiction has been pretty good, but my fiction was slow. And when I first asked Nick for help, I had about 600 people and I've now got over 5,000. So that's pretty exciting. And I have some, you know, that growth has come from a number of things, but a lot of what Nick helped me put in place. So that webinar will be Thursday, 10th of December at 3 p.m. US Eastern, 8 p.m. London. And yes, you will get the recording if you register. You can find that at thecreativepen.com/ 10K webinar 2. That's the number 10K. So 10K webinar 2, the number 2. thecreativepen.com/ 10K webinar 2. Yes, that might be a difficult link. I've also put a link in the show notes. So you can always find that on the backlist page, thecreativepen.com/ podcasts, and go to episode 245 and you'll find the link. Okay, what else? Oh, here's what you've sent me this week. David Bernstein says, listening while working on an author website design that I bartered in exchange for professional editing services, which is brilliant. Bartering is often a great thing to be doing. Richard Todd and also Matty Dalrymple both emailed to say that they took the advice from the podcast and changed their ebook prices in the UK and other non-US markets to end in the 0.99 and have seen sales in those markets that they never had before. So I wanted to again encourage you about that. And next week we'll have Dan Wood on from Draft to Digital and we talk about that again. So you will be convinced by the end of next week. Jeff Adams said, listening after Thanksgiving dinner. I'm working on my nano novel and husband is making paper chains for Christmas decorations. Marvellous. Ariadne Rooney, I just finished the estate planning podcast, went in to teach and a student brought this little guy in. There's a picture with a little snake, really cute little snake, lovely. DC Harrell, listening while changing the sheets last night and saw this out my window, full moon behind clouds. And I was out walking that night and also saw the full moon. It was a beautiful, beautiful night. Ellen Bard, listening to the podcast on a jog in Saudi Arabia, where I'm working this week and doing nano. And a picture of jogging along the road in Saudi Arabia. It looks really, really hot. Luke Condor, learning about death on the Creative Pen as I crack on with nano edits on Savile Row, London. And that picture looked a bit startled there, Luke, but happy writing. And Honoré, back at the gym. Lots to do, according to the Creative Pen podcast today. Maybe if I keep working out, I won't ever die. Well, you can try, Honoré. And Serena says, your podcast on motivation with Mark McGuinness really resonated aligning how we act with our value system. Thanks, both of you. Super. Okay, so this podcast episode is sponsored by Kobo Writing Life, and I'll play a word from our sponsor in a minute. And this corporate sponsorship pays for the hosting and transcription, but my time in producing the show is primarily sponsored by you guys. So a big thank you to all the people supporting on Patreon. Thanks especially to new patrons Anne Hampton, Kimberly Sheed, and Jeff Adams. I really do appreciate the Patreon support, and like your tweets and emails, it really demonstrates that you enjoy the show and want it to continue. And of course, on Patreon, you can support with even just a dollar per show to a maximum of 2 shows a month. So less than a coffee a month, or of course, you can buy my books. And Risen Gods and the co-writing book are out now. You can support the show at patreon.com, patreon.com/thecreativepen. Here's a word from Kobo.
Hello, Creative Pen listeners. This is Mark Lefebvre, Director of Self-Publishing and Author Relations for Kobo. I'm here to give you a little bit of a tip on pricing. You may not be aware that at Kobo, you have access to change your pricing in 8 unique currencies. So if you're an author from the UK, most likely you're pricing in pounds and the system is automatically converting. If you're an author in the US, you're most likely pricing in US dollars and letting the system auto-convert. But you need to take care. Our system will show you what the estimated price will be using auto-conversion, but I would advise that it's worth taking the time to understand what the optimum price in a different territory other than the one that you're in looks like. Take a look at the pricing that exists for books in your genre, in the category that you're publishing in, and I would advise that you probably round to the nearest 0.99. There's some consumer psychology that suggests that 99 cents is not the same as $1.02, and that $1.02 may as well be $1.99. Yes, we all know better as consumers, but that's a simple fact of the way that things work. And we've seen evidence of that in Kobo. We're rounding down or up to that nearest 99. Just gives it that optimum price point that looks good. And in some cases, particularly if you're rounding up, puts that extra money in your pocket. And that's where you want the money, is in your pocket. You can find more great tips like this at KoboWritingLife.com. But now back to your host.
Hi everyone, I'm Joanna Penn from thecreativepen.com, and today I'm here with Yarrow Starak. Hi Yarrow.
Hi Joanna.
Just a little introduction. Yarrow is a blogger, podcaster, speaker and entrepreneur at entrepreneurs-journey.com. I took Yarrow's blog mastermind course back in 2009 and it really changed my online life. So if I sound a little bit fangirly today, that will be why. And it's amazing what can happen over the years. But Yarrow, just to get started, I mean, you've been doing stuff for a long, long time, but just give us a sense of what Entrepreneur's Journey is about right now and what your business looks like these days.
Okay, well, right now, it's still a blog that chronicles my entrepreneurial journey. That's what it was when it started. It sort of skews way more to blogging and information products, selling, sort of teaching. So whatever you're a knowledge expert at, taking that knowledge and packaging it up and basically using a blog, an email list, and selling any kind of digital product, whether it's ebooks, online courses, membership sites, and so on. But over the years, I've talked about everything because I've been, at one point I was buying and selling websites as a strategy. Another, right at the start, I was running an editing company, and I used to have a card game website. So a lot of the early day content was writing about those initial experiences. Then I went into sort of personal development. It's the great thing about vlogging. You really can go anywhere with it and your audience will come with you, assuming it's interesting. So it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, and on that, it's always been your personal brand, hasn't it? You've never, you did try guest blogging for a bit, I remember, and then you stopped because it's you that people come for, right? It's still not a magazine site.
Yeah, there was an experiment about 4 years ago where the plan was to see if I can take the brand Entrepreneur's Journey bigger, as a lot of blogs do. A lot of the blogs that used to be one individual, whether it's a Mashable or a TechCrunch or Copy Blogger, where it was a person, then they brought on writers, and now it's sort of become a a group magazine site, like you said. So I wanted to have a go at doing that, and I did it. It wasn't bad. It just wasn't any better than what I was doing by myself. And in terms of my personal job, I went from being a writer to more of an editor, and I really do not like that exchange at all. So I decided to stick to just making it Yarrow's brand. And actually, you know, that experience just cemented how much I like being the writer. You know, I want to be the writer. I want to be out there. I want my name. I want the, you know, the ego boost of seeing my content and my words out there, as opposed to sort of owning a magazine. So I'm probably more writer than I am publisher nowadays.
Yeah, and we're going to come back to the writing stuff. But I want to start with, you know, the whole just blogging in general, because, you know, 10 years, oh, was it 10 years ago you started?
That's right.
I know, isn't that crazy? And you look so young.
Like 100 years in internet years. So.
I know, but realistically, you started way back in the day when it just wasn't trendy, or it was amongst real geeks, but now it's so mainstream. And I know people listening are wondering, is blogging even still the thing? I mean, there wasn't Facebook back then, there wasn't social media, you know, there was audio, not really podcasting. Is text blogging and writing online still viable?
Well, I think the simple answer to that is, do we still read content on the internet? I know I do. You know, even if you find a news article on Facebook or share it on Twitter, it usually goes back to a blog. I mean, I go on Facebook and I see articles coming from Business Insider, which essentially is a news blog. So then, you know, blogging is not going to disappear either. What may change is, you know, the actual interaction we have on the internet. But right now it's still, I mean, it's video, it's audio, it's text. Video is, you know, pretty much YouTube and Facebook and Periscope, maybe on the apps. Audio is obviously podcasting and iTunes, and then text is still pretty much blogs. So, and the thing I really like to emphasize to people who might be sort of questioning, is a blog something I need? Can't I just do social media, or can't I just podcast or something like that? If you look at the content source, as in where the podcast originates from or where the content that got shared on social media comes from, it's actually hosted on a blog. So I see the blog as kind of like the center of your universe on the internet. And then you can use all the other platforms to spread your message and bring people back to the blog. But it all starts at the blog. So that's often known as like the hub and spoke business model. So the hub is in the middle like a wheel, and you've got all the spokes coming out of it. So the blog is the hub, and you have social media, you have podcasting, you have YouTube, you have maybe something like on mobile like Periscope, you might be doing press releases. So all those are spokes that bring traffic back to your blog. And then what I do is I bring that traffic from the blog to the email list. That's kind of like phase two. But the blog is absolutely critical.
And my audience are very interested in intellectual property assets, you know, building things that will put money in your pocket for years. And I remember learning that from you about the website, because I had two free blogs, you know, built on WordPress.com before doing your course. So why is a blog or a site like yours now an intellectual property asset?
Oh, it's so important. It always has been. It doesn't matter what era you go back in on the internet. As each new platform becomes popular and everyone's talking about, you know, MySpace and everyone's talking about Facebook, all those platforms you don't own when you use them. You know, you can have your account switched off. Instagram, I mean, I started doing Instagram, and within a month, my account just got deleted for no reason. I was like, well, this sucks. You know, the good thing about having your own blog and your own email list, like you said, assets that you own, no one can take them away from you like you can lose an account on an external platform. I just did an interview with a friend of mine. His name is JJ. He's a magician. And he did two or three years worth of YouTube videos. It was like 150 videos. And then they basically had their account deleted overnight because of they were using a marketing service that turned out to be breaking some terms of use on YouTube. So 2.5 years, 3 years worth of content disappeared off YouTube, and it disappeared off their blog because they were embedding YouTube videos as well. But what they had been doing was growing a blog and growing an email list. So They quickly recreated a new YouTube account, uploaded all the videos, sent a newsletter out, and put some notices on the blog, and they were back within a couple of months. So, you know, without the email list and without the blog to sort of reach their audience, they would have had no way to get back in so quickly. And it turned out to be a good thing because they then gained some benefits of having a new account and ended up getting extra exposure on YouTube because of that. So, you know, the short answer is, you know, own your domain name, own your email list, own your blog, and those things can't be taken away from you.
The day that Twitter, I logged into Twitter and it had disappeared and it said your account's gone, and right. It freaked me out because I've spent years building my Twitter audience, and you know, my Twitter audience is much bigger than my email list or my blog, and it really did kind of freak me out. And that day I remember going, okay, you know, you can't rely on anyone, can you? Even if you think you play by the rules, they change the rules.
Yes, exactly.
All the time. Okay, so we talked a bit there about text blogging, and I mean the thing is, and I remember when I first started and came to your course, I remember thinking, God, text blogging is like howling into the wind. I mean, it really is. That nobody is listening to me. Nobody is interacting. I don't know what, you know, is this worth it? So how long does it take to get traction if you want to build a platform?
You know, I get asked that question. Everyone wants a guarantee. Like, when will I make money from my blog? Will it be next week, next month, next year? You know, that's such a... And it's a question I think that's not really fair to ask just before you start anyway, because the biggest variable there is the person asking the question. So how long are they going to do it for? Have they chosen a topic that is popular on the internet and people care about? Do they have a sort of unique way of presenting their ideas that will catch on? Will they do any marketing to put their content out into the world? So you're not just howling into the wind, you're, you know, going onto someone else's stage and saying, read my words, which is you know, how you get attention. So there's all those variables. Now, in terms of a specific answer, I've seen people get results in terms of, you know, building an audience and getting traffic within weeks. And then I've heard the stories, and I'm certainly an example of it. It'll take a year or two to make an income from it, you know, certainly a full-time income. So the key, as I think of any business, is to not see the end goal as the sole determining factor of your success, because you're going to be working towards that end goal for a long time. And if you don't feel you're getting close enough to it, you're going to give up. And that actually, I see, is the number one reason why so many things fail, certainly why blogs fail, is just giving up. And that usually comes down to the mindset and the self-esteem of the person behind the blog. So I'm a big fan of sort of celebrating the little success steps that you take along the way, you know, buying a domain name, setting up your blog in the first place, creating each of your social media channels, publishing your first article, getting your first subscriber to a newsletter, and then ultimately the biggest win, making a first sale of whatever it is you sell. And that's the sort of the chronology you should go through, celebrating each of those points along the way and using that as a motivation boost, so you keep your self-esteem high, you're excited about the process, not just about the end game. And that's something you have to learn the hard way. Like I certainly went through it in my early days with my businesses before I was blogging. I wanted to make money sooner rather than later. I was looking at all the examples of people making a ton of money around me that I wasn't even close to. It's very easy to kind of get negatively I found it negative. Some people get inspired by other people's results. I almost get I wish I could do that instead of my reaction. So, you know, you got to look for things and figure out what actually keeps you motivated. In my case, I compare myself to myself. And I think that's really important that everyone do something like that. That's really the only barometer you should use. So, celebrate the little wins and keep moving forward.
What was great is that you talked about the end goal, and I was thinking then, what have your end goals been? Because, you know, when I first met you, you had long hair back then, right? You know, that the long-haired Yarrow. And I think I remember you saying you just bought your first car with your blogging money.
It's a long time ago. Yeah.
I know. Well, that's the funny thing. I mean, you were already a full-time blogger, but I think then you bought a house, and I remember listening just going, okay, this is great. But so, you know, and we all get this comparisonitis, and we're always like, well, what is the end goal? Is there actually one? Do you move the goalposts as you get more success?
Well, yeah, I guess the answer is yes to everything. You always, climb a mountain and see the next mountain that's higher up in the distance. So when I started, I always had a simple goal with everything I did online, which was to avoid full-time employment. I didn't want to have a job. So that was primary goal number one, never get a 9-to-5-er. And I achieved that with my first sort of full-time business, that editing company. So when I started my blog, I had this sort of basic salary income stream coming in from my business. So I treated my blog like a hobby. But that being said, I did see, Darren Rouse had published a check for his blog where he'd made $15,000 in AdSense income. So, I was thinking that'd be nice. I was starting to see a few more other bloggers pop up. And then I started to see these internet marketing guys too, guys like Terry Dean, and there was Mike Fulsame and Jeff Walker and Evan Pagan and Rich Sheffrin. And these guys, in fact, Terry Dean was one of the best examples. He explained how he, over a weekend, sent a couple of emails to his email list and made $90,000. And I'm going, I got to figure out how that works. I never hear bloggers talking about this whole making $90,000 from a couple of emails thing. So that's actually when I discovered the two different worlds. There's the blogging world and there's the internet marketing world. It's a bit like, I think, in your world, there's the writing world, the author world, and then internet marketing can be applied to that, but they're pretty much separate disciplines. So while there's some overlap with blogging, back then when I started, it wasn't sort of done. You didn't grow an email list from your blog. It's kind of common knowledge today. But I was one of the first people to sort of really take those two mediums, so the internet marketers and the bloggers, and combine them. And that's when I started to get the big results. That's when I started to set my sights on, okay, I can actually turn this blog into a business. I think my first big milestone goal was sort of 6 figures in 1 year, to make 100,000. But, really the goals were what you mentioned. I wanted a car, I wanted a house, I wanted to move out from my mother's house. I wanted to not have debt. I didn't want to have a job. I wanted to have complete freedom. For me, freedom was the primary goal. So not only was I looking to make enough money, but I need to make sure it was done in a way that didn't have me spending 12 hours a day at the computer, which I'd seen some other business owners, people who were kind of traditional entrepreneurs, and I was reading about them and following them. They worked harder than employees. I didn't want a 9-to-5. I didn't want to get an 8-till-8 either, which was what entrepreneurs seem to do running these businesses. So I had to be very careful about picking, a business model that was highly leveraged. And this was before a 4-hour work week. I was really striving for what Tim Ferriss sort of broke into the mainstream with his book 5-6 years before he wrote the book. And that was a big goal for me. So every business I had to have highly leveraged, low time, high return. And blogging delivered that. So, the basic goals were first make a living from it. Then I sold off my other businesses and focused 100% on blogging. Get to 6 figures, get a car, get a house, get a life, get everything structured and set up. But once I reached that point, I think I probably had a bit of a burnout phase. I think by the time I sort of sold about $1 million worth of products over a maybe 4 or 5 year period there from the 2005 to maybe 2010. So, I pretty much bought everything I wanted to at the time, and I was just a bit tired. So I think at that stage, that's when I, not that I was really burnt out heaps, but I felt that I didn't want to necessarily do what everyone else was doing, which was just make more money for the sake of making more money. So let's find a new type of business. That's actually when I did a startup. That's when I started playing around with the magazine model on my blog. Mm-hmm. So it's more about, finding things that you are looking forward to doing, I think, once you reach a certain goal. And as they say, right, once you make $100,000 a year, your life doesn't change a whole lot if you make $200,000. It's not a big difference. It's just getting to that six-figure level that can have a dramatic impact.
Yeah, and I hit that earlier this year, so I was very happy to do that. And it's so funny when you hear, and that's why one of the reasons I share openly about what I do is because of your example. And I think that authenticity is so important, isn't it? I mean, the only, that people remember you and they're attracted to you, and like your desire for freedom, that's always been mine as well, which is why you're a role model. So can you just talk a bit about the importance of authenticity and any time you've been kind of scared about sharing honestly and how you've got over that?
Yeah, you know, it's kind of weird. I'm an introvert and a fairly strong one. So when I started blogging, people would come to me and say, "You like reveal way more on your blog than you ever tell me in person." That's kind of not right, you know? You should be open in person more so than in your writing. And I think it's an introvert thing maybe that we feel comfortable sitting in front of a computer and sharing these thoughts because there's some distance from the actual human beings who read them.
Yeah,
So
we're all introverts here, by the way, so
right,
you're
yeah, that
welcome.
might be the case. Sorry, extroverts, if you're listening in, this won't make any sense. But yeah, so you know, there's two things at play here. There's that natural introvertedness myself, but then there's also the medium of blogging, and we have to remember where it came from. It's called a web blog, a journal. You know, it's a place where you're basically opening up your diary to the world. So I love that. I love the fact that I could write the way I talk in my head. You know, I didn't have to write academically or formally or like a report. It's just how I think about things. So that really lent itself to being open and clear. I guess as time went by, I learned that that's actually a marketing technique as well. Authenticity builds trust. Trust leads to sales. So, you know, it's not necessarily a bad thing. And I think that's why a lot of blogs over the years have done incredibly well. It's just this amazing amount of trust that's been built up between their readership and the author just because they're transparent. I mean, you know, some of the top bloggers we can think about today in my industry are as big as they are because they write income reports. You know, they tell people exactly how they make money and what they do to make that money, and that makes them very popular. I remember over the years, though, I've written like I wrote about. I really regret this one, but long time ago, I read about like, would you date a blogger way back in the early days? And you know, I would never write that now, but I was obviously feeling a little lonely at that time, and I wrote this blog post. And then, you know, my mother passed away, and I wrote about that on my blog, and that's, you know, not a business subject at all, but it was very important to me. And it's therapy. That's the other thing too. Like writing about what you're going through and then what you're learning and experiencing as a result, and then opening up on that, actually, it does help you sort of come to terms with things, process it, and as a result, creates this connection with your audience. I remember, I don't know if you might remember her. There was a woman named Caroline Middlebrook. She was sort of popular probably back when you and I first connected. She was just getting started with her blog. And it was another sort of make money online blog, and it was good, but she had this event where her traffic just spiked, and it was because she revealed that she was a lesbian, and she had been cheated on by her girlfriend had hooked up with her male friend or something like that. It was very sort of soap opera dramatic style, and I remember going and reading it going, this is so off topic for her blog. But she got way more comments and interaction. And you know, I'm not saying you should air your dirty laundry necessarily on your blog as a traffic technique, but there is something about being that open with your life if you're comfortable doing that. So, you know, everyone's got their own barometer of this, and you know, I think it's important to do that.
Yeah, and I remember when your mum died, and I think you spoke about it on your audio, what we now call a podcast. You had
Right.
your audio going up, and I remember thinking, if somebody's sick in my family, I want to be able to spend whatever time. I think you said I can spend whatever time I want at the hospital, because you didn't have to ask permission from a job
Right.
to go. And I remember thinking that's got to be one of the definitions of living a free life is to, to go and do that for people that you love. And, that made a real difference. So sharing that was super important, I think. And for a lot of your listeners, but you presumably you do have a line. Do you have a line that you
Yeah, I have a line.
that
Not going to
you
put any
that you
topless photos on my blog, let's put it that way.
No nudity. I don't have any nudity on mine. It's all
Oh,
right.
good. Okay. I mean, it's a thing to do nowadays in the land of selfies and
That's a good
Instagram,
point. But also, I mean, actually, interestingly, let's talk about video because I also remember when you started doing the videos. And, as introverts, the video is difficult because and also being a writer, we like crafting our words rather than speaking them, right? And so what is the place of multimedia in how you share, and how do you get the energy, I guess, to do that kind of thing?
Well, you know, video is definitely the third tool I use in terms of popularity. You know, writing's my one, podcasting's my two, video's three. So I don't do as much video. And you're quite right. It's purely because it's not a natural fit. I don't, you know, it takes energy. I do like it because there's more, I guess, celebrity style status from doing video. Like at the end of the day, that's how you become really famous, is get yourself on TV, right? And that's what we do today with YouTube. So there's an element of my ego just loves being on the camera in that regard. But I think, you know, I don't mind talking. I like sharing content through video, and I think people who are not writers should gravitate to video. It's such a better channel for people like that. And I've got a number of students who, you know, they shun writing and go the video panel or go the podcasting route. For me, it was more a case of just having a presence in all formats of media. So, you know, I've done YouTube. Mostly nowadays I sort of share my podcast on YouTube, so it's not anything different to that. But you know, over the years, I've just done 5-minute videos. You know, you just open up your phone and hit record and talk an idea out. It's the good thing about sort of being in the space of whatever your subject matter is. You can read a book, get an idea, pop up your phone, say, "Hey, I just learned this great idea." Upload to YouTube, and you're publishing content. So, you know, the trick there is to really dedicate yourself to it. So, I've been more dedicated to regular writing and regular podcasting. But if video is your thing, It can be amazing. How, like, I have my friend JJ, he's got 40 million views on YouTube. There's so many obviously amazing video stars nowadays thanks to YouTube, and Facebook is just becoming a as big platform for video, I think. So I'm seriously looking at that for the future too. Maybe not to necessarily make it my main platform, but I think it's so important to use the medium that people expect. So people are kind of starting to expect to see video on Facebook, even if it's like what you and I are doing now. You know, just get yourself in front of the camera and talk. And you could say simple things like, "Hey, I've just written an article on this subject, go read it." So it still allows you to be a writer, but you get to make a first connection through the video and bring people to the content that you've written. It is important because it's nothing more personal than what we're doing now. It's amazing, even though you and I just sitting in our rooms talking to each other, and there'll be people watching this just because they want to see our facial expressions and, you know, all those sorts of things. And that's a bit weird, but that's the way it is. So.
Yeah, it's funny that, and you know, I have people email me and say they log on to look at the video just to see what the other person looks like,
right?
And then they go back to the audio. So it's just a human thing, isn't it? We just want that. We just have to connect. And I know many authors, you know, particularly older authors and particularly women, get really worried about showing their face, and many authors, of course, write under pseudonyms, so it can be quite difficult. Mm. Again, I just credit you with everything. But you know, just putting yourself out there and just being honest, that's all you can do, isn't it? And there's so many different people on the internet. You'll find your niche somehow.
Yeah, and you know, it's a self-esteem thing we have to all go through. Is, you know, I'm not pretty enough for the internet, or, you know, I'm too old for it, or I'm not a good speaker or talker. You know, I avoided doing any kind of oral presentation throughout my high school and university days. So that moment when I first started doing a podcast and then I first did a YouTube video, you know, it's pretty terrifying. But then you sort of realize it's actually just you sitting in a room talking, so there's no one. You actually feel a bit weird too, but it's less weird than talking in front of a big crowd of people. So, you know, it's practice. Like, that to me is the best answer to this sort of question. If you have any fear regarding all these mediums, don't judge yourself on your first effort. It is something you practice. Like, think about the first time you rode a bike, you know, or didn't ride one, you fell off a bike. You're not going to basically make a decision on that first time you do it. You just practice, get better, and then you'll see where it takes you. That's the important thing.
Yeah, and back on writing then, because you must have written on your blog 50 books.
No, not about 50. I'm sure there's maybe 4 or 5 in there. Yeah.
But in the age of short Kindle ebooks.
Actually, yeah, in short Kindles, it's probably, you know, 30 or 40.
Do you know how many words you've written?
I couldn't tell you. I mean, some of my posts have been in the sort of 5,000 to 10,000 word length. Not on average. On average, they're 2,000 to 3,000, but 10 years, and certainly in the first sort of 4 or 5 years, I was pretty close to daily and certainly weekly or biweekly. So Not to mention, you know, you've got the free reports you write, there's all the courses you create. I mean, Blog Mastermind, the first version, the course that you went through, that was all written. I think I remember doing the math on that. That was about 2,000 to 3,000 words, no, maybe like 4,000 to 5,000 words per lesson. And there was 6 months worth of weekly lessons in that. So, you know, it was a lot of, I had to really hustle to write all the content for the course at the same time writing a blog, at the same time writing a newsletter. Mm. We shouldn't forget, I mean, how many emails do we write today if we're running our own email list? I think I do probably half as much of my writing on email now as I do on my blog. So there's probably a number of books in that content too. So it's huge. But it's what you do. It's fun, right?
Yeah. And what else would we be doing? But in terms of that, what is your opinion on the book publishing market and your place in it now and in the future potentially?
Well, I, you know, I'm still on the fence of I dream one day of being the published author and, you know, having the mainstream success. You know, when I first read Paulo Coelho's writing as in my, you know, 21, 20 years old, I was like, this would be the kind of book I'd love to have out there. And I think that's probably why I haven't dived in too much proper publishing, because I don't really want to sort of be known as a blog writer in traditional publishing sense. I do actually have a book planned probably for the year after next that will be the one blog book, because it's just a massive credibility tool. Yeah. I think there's still nothing better than saying published author, right? So, you know, you can't go by that. And I want to get that out there. I want to, you know, get it on shelves. I can't wait to see that in a bookshop one day. After that, though, I mean, I actually would be a bit like you, maybe not do the crazy crime murder stories as you do. I don't think I have that in me.
Oh, you never know. To learn.
Yeah, you never know. I mean, you were surprised to hear that you have that in you. So, you know, I certainly wouldn't mind, though, diving into some other subject matter. And I'm actually blown away by Amazon and the ease it is now. Like, I interviewed a guy named Jordan Gray, who's a relationships expert, and he started by basically leaving Vancouver, Canada, with only 3 months' worth of savings, pushing himself into Thailand, where it's a bit cheaper to live, no credibility, no presence around that subject, and sits there over 3 months and writes like 2 Kindle books, 2 blog posts a day to his blog, and starts getting private coaching clients. And I was like, looking at his books, and you're right, you know, Kindle books are 30 pages, which is basically the kind of free reports that I write. So I could see myself, and I've kind of always had this as my older plan when I kind of, I guess, I don't know, I'm not sure when it's going to be. It used to be 35, but that's what I thought. Now I'm 36, so it's probably more like 40 now. But some point sitting on, you know, in coffee shops and writing books as opposed to blog posts, but on purely subjects that, you know, not just to get leads, not just to build a business, but to see what kind of books come out and what gets traction. And I guess be a writer, proper writer. Maybe I'm not being fair to my fellow bloggers, but, you know, it's a different medium. And my blogging has been so entrenched in my business that I don't know necessarily what writing for the sake of writing is like anymore. When I started, I was there. I had that place where I could just go, I'm not sure if this is my business, so I'm going to write about whatever I like. Now it's flipped completely. Every piece of writing is strategic. Every piece of writing has a business goal in mind. So it's very different to that sort of free-flowing, certainly fiction-style writing. So I'd like to dive into that a bit myself.
Yeah, well, that'd be great. And it's so funny because I don't know if you've heard, do you listen to Tim Ferriss's show?
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah, sometimes, because he talks about writing fiction and I think he's got a similar thing to you. It's like, oh, but when you've got a reputation for a certain thing, it becomes very difficult to be somebody else, which is why I have two names. You know, I have two brands, two websites, and my fiction self is quite different. But you have a very, a recognizable name. So,
yeah.
Do you think?
Well, what do I do, Joanna? Do I go out there and be Yarrow the fiction author too? Or,
well, this is, you know, it would be difficult. Like, I would personally say probably not. Like, unless you wrote techno thrillers, or, you know, your audience just wouldn't necessarily cross over. As I found, only about 5% of, you know, nonfiction move into fiction in, you know, whatever it is. So it, I think it's quite interesting. Or if you wrote fantasy, you know, because you come from the original, was it Magic the Gathering?
Yeah. I'm not planning on writing about dragons, but yes, I can see where you're going.
You know what I mean? There's quite a lot of techie guys into that type of thing. So I think that branding thing is so interesting. But on that that international thing, because of course you do have an odd name, and you're Canadian Australian, right? It's just those two nationalities.
Well, in terms of where I've spent most of my time, but you know, the family history is very different, but I won't go into all the details about that.
but what it, again, is interesting about you is you're not based in America, and you're not in the UK. So the Canadian Australian thing, what do you see happening outside of the US? So I really try and focus on this international sense, because in Britain we barely have like a blogging ecosystem. Like Australia, there's you and Darren Rouse and things that happen, and but do you see the shift in that technology stuff moving out of the US? Do you see these different communities happening?
It's a tough one, you know. Having just landed in Canada now, in Toronto, there's no blogging community here. There's not even an internet marketing community of much significance. So having come from Australia, where Darren fosters a fairly massive blogging community, to be fair, it's a predominantly female community. It's sort of mummy bloggers and what else is there? Mummy and bit of... I went to Darren's event, like 500 women. It was literally, I think it was 500, maybe it's 95% women. So, you know, if you're a guy, you kind of stand out. It's an unusual experience. So at a conference to be completely like that. And that's great though, because Darren really has fostered an amazing community, and it's Australia wide. It's very integrated. There's a lot of events, and without Darren, that wouldn't exist. So I think a lot of it comes down to a figurehead really taking on responsibility. I mean, he runs that event every year, makes it bigger every year. He obviously loves it too. Vlogging is his thing as well. So when I came to Canada, I look for those icons, those figureheads, just to see what's going on. There's actually, in Vancouver, there's a bit of an internet marketing scene. There's a couple of meetups that are big, and there's a few people like John Chow came from Vancouver. There's a few other people there. Toronto's more of a tech scene. I think this is the sort of division. You've got traditional tech startup, then you've got more internet marketing, social media, blogging crowd. And they're two different crowds. So I think at the end of the day, it really comes down to one or two or three people putting on events consistently. You know, you have to run an event every month or every week, or making sure that something's going out there, because a lot of events will start and then sort of fizzle, and that's it. There's no traction behind it. And same for even like one person getting a lot of press coverage. You know, if someone goes out there and gets themselves on mainstream news talking about they're making money blogging, you know, suddenly that becomes a bigger thing. Like Tim Ferriss is a great example. Okay, yes, he's American, but that book, The 4-Hour Workweek, would not have done so amazingly well if he didn't hustle to get so much press coverage in a short amount of time. He did a fantastic book launch within the sort of online business space. So that's a really impressive an example of that. So I think there's no reason why in the UK someone can't stand up and really go hard after something. But I think we have to look at cultural expectations too. America is a very individualistic go-getter culture to begin with. It's kind of accepted that people really, really want this individual success and go after it like nothing else. I mean, look at Donald Trump right now running for president. You know, that's about as egotistical individual as you can. Australia has the tall poppy syndrome. You know, you're not meant to go out and push yourself, because as soon as you get to the top, you get cut down for being too sort of grandiose. And I think, you know, the UK is probably a bit similar.
Oh yeah,
a bit more no sort one's of softer. Allowed to be,
just unless you're an aristocrat, just stop it.
Right, so you know, you can't be tooting your own horn, so to speak.
No.
So there's cultural aspects to this too that impact what happens and what grows. But it is interesting when you kind of land in certain cities, like for example, Israel. I've never actually been there, but I remember looking at the stats. I believe they got the number 3 best tech startup scene. Yeah. After San Francisco and New York, right? So I think that's just a cultural thing. It's very entrepreneurial. The you know, the Jewish culture is very entrepreneurial, so it makes sense for them to have this massive tech culture. So I think there'll be pockets of in cities around the world. Certain cities encourage it. I know like Singapore and Hong Kong, they make it easy for people to start businesses there. So you're probably going to start seeing that. But I think it's really more like here in Toronto. I've got a friend of mine, Kirsten, who's trying to get going with some regular internet marketing meetups. We're having the first one next week, actually. And if she sticks to it, there's no reason why that can't turn into a really big event. Now, I've kind of secretly been thinking about next year actually really pushing my story to mainstream press in Toronto, just because I just don't think anyone's actually stood up and say, hey, I'm making money blogging, and really tried to get that story pushed far and wide. Mm. You know, Darren kind of did it in Australia. And then once you've got the leader kind of ends up eating up all the press coverage. You know, all the journalists go back to the same person because it's the only person they know. So if there's a chance for someone to stand up and be the first, it's worth doing it. It's just kind of surprising in 2015 that, you know, there aren't more other places. It's just...
Yeah. And I mean, and just following on from that, I mean, you have people in your audience all around the world. And I'm really excited about, you know, internet.org with Facebook and Virgin and Qualcomm and everybody putting streaming internet to, I think it's everywhere by like 2018 or something, isn't it? And putting cheap cell phones in everybody's hands. So to me, sub-Saharan Africa, India, Indonesia, these are the most entrepreneurial places on the planet, because they have no healthcare, no benefits, mm-hmm. no, you know, they're just not supported. They have to make their own money. So, I mean, is that something you see coming? Like Nigerians, for example, my sister-in-law is Nigerian. The Nigerians are super entrepreneurial. I mean, they are amazing. And I mean, do you see that? And there are Nigerian bloggers coming out now, aren't there? Which is fascinating. So do you see this demographic shift changing as well as the internet, I guess, goes global?
You know, I've over the years, yeah, Nigeria would have to be the number one, I think, in terms of like emails I get from Nigerians who are very excited. Unfortunately, there's that sort of baggage they have to carry around from all the Nigerian scams that have been floated around over the years too. So they have to, you know, overcome that prejudice to begin with. Mm. You know, I think, like you said, technology, first of all, you got to get the basics of technology and make sure that's stable so you can actually run a business. Once that's there, it's all a case of, you know, the right people kind of rising up and creating businesses. And I think, like you said, wherever there's a developing area is a huge opportunity. One of the things I often say to my students, they come to me and saying, you know, I want to do what you're doing, but I'm in China and I want to do it in the Chinese language, or I want to do what you're doing, but I'm in Serbia and I want to do it in Serbian or something like that. And obviously, you know, Africa too. And they kind of, sometimes they say, you know, should I just try and do it in English even though it's not my first language, or should I try and do it in both, you know, translate it? And I'm like, tremendous opportunity for you to be one of the leaders in your country in your language. So why wouldn't you go after that? Because A, the competition is not as sophisticated. B, you've got a chance to use what you're learning and apply it, and you're going to get way quicker, better results because it's not saturated. People won't expect to see things like the basics, like a landing page or you know, someone who dedicates themselves to doing consistent blogging or consistent YouTubing or consistent podcasting in that country, in that language. It just won't be that many options. So if you even do a good job, it doesn't have to be the best job, you're going to really stand out. So I think it's crazy the opportunities you can, you know, go after there. And this is something that we've been saying. I think I remember back in 06, 07, someone was talking about, I'm thinking about becoming like the pay-per-click Google AdWords expert for Japan. You know, I want to be the Perry Marshall of Japan. And I was like, that's a brilliant idea. You know, Japan's wealthy. I doubt there's many people who've stood up and say, I'm a pay-per-click expert. So I would look, you know, if you're watching this and you're in a country where there just isn't a blogging expert, or there isn't a self-publishing author expert, or there isn't a PPC expert or YouTube or social media, and you like that platform, go after it in your country and try and be a leader. Even if you don't, you know, have runaway success today, as the country increases their technology, standards of living increase, you know, the basic financial means of the individuals increase, you're going to be well positioned to really take a lion's share of that market. And that can be amazing in a few years' time.
Yeah, definitely. So then I just wanted to ask you about longevity in, you know, because like you said, it's been 10 years. You're still going. I mean, you said you mentioned a bit of burnout, but, you know, you're still doing this. This is, I presume, still what you love. So what are your tips for maintaining this long term?
Well, there's been a cycle, I guess. So, you know, I started and it was simple. It's just, I want to write, I want to experiment with blogging. It starts to work. Now I want to turn this into a business. And I learned about email marketing and I want to start having emails where I make $10,000 from writing one email. That sounds really cool. So let's try and do that, you know. So it was all those new things, very exciting. And I did it. You know, it took me probably 5 years to really do all of it. But I went through that whole process and did what I wanted to do. Then I hit that kind of burnout phase and I started to start up. But even when that was happening, I was still writing my blog. So good thing about having a blog, if you're doing anything, you can write about it. And it helps. You know, it helped my startup to write about my startup. In fact, all the customers we got to my startup were from my blog. So it's not like it was a separate business in that regard. It was a new business model, but I was still marketing 100% through my blog. Mm. So it's an amazing asset in that regard. And I still liked writing. That was the key. Now, when I ended up closing down the startup with my partner in that project, it was primarily because we didn't want to be in the industry that we were finding ourselves in. And it also taught me how amazing the sort of lifestyle business, information marketing, blogging, writing world is. It made me really appreciate that you can sit in a cafe and write for 2 hours and call your day done. You've done enough work. That's it. You know, a tech startup person, they've got investors. They have to do 12-hour days. You have to hustle. So if you're over 35, you're pretty much too old to do a startup in a lot of ways because it requires too much energy and time. Not that that can't be done, but you know, it does require an incredible amount of dedication. It's worse than the 9-to-5 that I was trying to avoid right at the beginning. So I got re-energized as a result of that because I went, you know what? This is the best business model for my personality. Introvert, writer, coffee shop. I want to live on my laptop, travel when I want to, have that freedom. So that really re-energized me. I always liked writing. It made me want to write more. What happened, though, that was probably around 3 years ago now. I actually created a vision. I think this is really key to answer your question about longevity. If you see something you're trying to achieve and you know the steps to get there, visions can be a bit fuzzy when you're starting because you just don't have much established yet and you're not exactly sure what's going to work. But as things start to work, the vision starts to crystallize. So back 2012 for me, I was actually starting almost from scratch. I had my blog and I had my email list, but I closed down all my programs. So being in that had been closed for 2 years. My other training courses were closed and they were just dated. I didn't want to sell them anymore because it wasn't fair to do so. So I had this vision for a whole new series of ebooks. I wanted to write a couple of courses, a new version of Blog Mastermind, a coaching community, just seeing a proper information teaching business behind my blog. And that motivated me for the next 3 years. Since then, I've literally just been creating content, creating product, and setting up a system. But my goal out of that was to basically, first of all, get everything I know how to do into content that people can buy. So if you want to learn how to buy and sell websites, I actually did a bit of that. There's a product for that. If you want to learn how to do blogging for money and sell your products, there's a course for that. There's a community if you want coaching. There's interviews. I even have a paid podcast. You know, people can join that as well. So I executed that vision. I'm sort of probably two-thirds of the way through it now. I've got another year, maybe year and a half to go, and it'll be done. With the grand plan of that just sort of turning my business into, this was always the dream with the blog. Write, because writing is what you do, but there's a machine running behind the blog. So it's what I teach actually this as well. I call it the blog sales funnel. It essentially means someone comes to your blog, they join your email list, and then through automation, through automatic follow-up emails, through delivery of more blog posts, you're actually educating, giving away free value, but ultimately selling people your products and moving people up the funnel to the people who want really, really close contact with you and are willing to spend several thousand dollars a year for that. So that's a vision I had back 3 years ago to finish that, to build a machine to run behind my blog. And once that's finished, that's when I was going to stop and go, okay, jump into a new writing project, maybe a new blogging project about a different subject. Not sure, to be absolutely honest. I kind of think about it a lot because it's exciting to think about new projects. But you know, the vision is important. I see it happen too with a lot of the people I've sort of coached or talked to over the years. Mm-hmm. They start with a basic goal. Like, I got to get out of this job and I want to make enough money from my internet business to support myself. And they might, some people don't get anywhere. Some people start something and doesn't go anywhere. And there's a few people who just hit on the right thing for them at the right time, and it works. And then suddenly they just create this huge vision. It's not, I'm not, no longer is it, do I want to make 5,000 a year. I want to make 10 million a year now. I'm going to have this team. And I'm going to have a huge Instagram channel, a huge YouTube channel. They want to do everything suddenly. So, I mean, you got to balance things out. But I think for most people who've been in this game long time, there's two things. It's a passion for the core activity they do. For us bloggers, it's very much content production. And then there's a vision for where they want to see that core activity take them. Mm-hmm. And it's those two things that can pretty much drive you to wherever you're trying to get to.
Yeah, fantastic. And of course, I modeled my kind of idea on that living on the laptop and location independence and that lifestyle blog. So I want to thank you again for giving me that vision back then. And I guess also for people to be encouraged that, and I know people follow me now in the same way that I follow you. And that's kind of crazy. And it's brilliant, isn't it? That, you know, you can help people and they can change their lives as well. So I wondered if we could just last question. Just you've revamped, as you said, Blog Mastermind, which is the course I took back in 2009, and you've redone it for 2016, I guess. So just tell people what is in that course and where they can find it.
Sure. Well, you know, the version you took was obviously a lot more green in terms of the era. You know, 2007 was when I first started that course. And, you know, to a degree back then, we could just write a blog and people would show up because there wasn't as much competition. When I decided to, well, I closed that one down and I decided to make a 2.0 version of Blog Mastermind, I had to look at where we're at now. You know, I've got to be realistic. If I want to put something out there that can get a result, people starting today are facing way more competition. So I had to sort of change the focus. First of all, my focus changed. When I taught you, and obviously what I was doing as well back then, and a lot of your fellow, you know, sort of students then, we were talking about advertising income, affiliate income, building a magazine kind of blog maybe. So, and while that works still, it's pretty challenging. You know, there's some great case studies that have made million-dollar blogs using that model. I personally didn't. I stopped doing advertising. I stopped doing very many affiliate promotions. And I wanted to zero in on my teaching content. And this is not just financially better, but also there's a lot of gratification for selling your own content, right? Like authors will know this. It's very satisfying to not just be a writer, but to be paid and people are paying to read you, which is pretty amazing. It's the same thing as a course teacher. I write ebooks, I write courses. People are paying money to go through my material. So that's very gratifying. So I rejigged the whole focus of Blog Mastermind to be about any person who has some kind of expertise or knowledge or experience who wants to package that knowledge into information and then sell it through the mediums of blogging and email marketing. So it's really narrowed in on that kind of teacher, writer, speaker, expert, author kind of group of people who haven't maybe created an online presence and want to do that and then use this blog sales funnel model to sell their products. So I rebuilt the entire course around that. It's also a lot shorter in the sense that when we did it first time around, it was a 6-month program. Nowadays, no one has patience to wait 6 months to go through training. So I squeezed it all into 6 weeks instead. obviously, you can do it quicker than that or slower than that if you want to, but most people don't have the follow through beyond sort of that kind of time period. So 6 weeks, it's video training, it's audio training, it's written training for whatever medium you like. And yeah, it's all available, you know, blogmastermind.com. Although I like to give people the Blog Profits Blueprint as the introduction to it. So I'm sure you've got a link to give people the Blog Profits Blueprint.
I'll put that up on the screen and on the audio.
Right. So you know the Blog Profits Blueprint very well because your book has a very similar name to it, your free report. So
yes, I should say I model the Author 2.0 Blueprint directly on Yarrow's Blueprint. And of course, we're allowed to model, aren't we? That's the whole point.
That's the whole point. Yeah, copying it. I mean, I took the, I don't think I took the phrase blueprint, but there was certainly a lot of mastermind, blueprint, all these words, that roadmap, they all get recycled over and over again. But yeah, I mean, the Blog Profits Blueprint, I also completely rewrote. So that's the free report I give to people as a way to introduce them to this world of blogging and selling their own teaching products. So I think it's the best place to start because if you're not sure how any of this works. You know, read about it, get a basic knowledge and see what you're up against first, and then decide whether you want to take a course like Blog Mastermind.
And just tell people your website again.
Sure. Well, the simplest answer is to Google my name, Yaro, Y-A-R-O. Again, the weird name does allow me to kind of dominate the search rankings for it, so that's kind of nice. But my blog is entrepreneurs-journey.com. But Google Yaro and you'll find it as a first result.
Fantastic. Thanks so much for your time, Yaro. That was great.
Thanks, Joanna.
So I hope you enjoyed that interview with Yaro Starek. And remember, you can get his free blog profits blueprint at thecreativepen.com/blog profits blueprint. And as I said, that is what kickstarted my own site at The Creative Pen. So very exciting. Go check that out at thecreativepen.com/blog profits blueprint. Thanks for listening today. I hope you found it helpful. You might also like the backlist episodes at thecreativepen.com/podcasts. You can also get your free author 2.0 blueprint at thecreativepen.com/blueprint. If you'd like to connect, you can tweet me at The Creative Pen or find me on Facebook at The Creative Pen. See you next time.